And tonight we have our speaker, Pete, who will bring us through more about alcoholism.
My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. So last time that I was here speaking, I did step one. And I'm still going to be touching on step one. We read there is a solution. We read through most of it. I couldn't tell exactly where I left off, and I decided to kind of just leave it there. And we're going to start fresh and more about alcoholism. We're going to cover one, two, and three. I like these early chapters, especially for the newcomer, because these early chapters are really hammering home what it means to be alcoholic, right? It says in How It Works, to read it exactly. I won't read it exactly, but basically at How It Works, it asks us if we are convinced of these three pertinent ideas. These three pertinent ideas are facts about the alcoholic and are made clear in these first couple chapters. Having read these first couple chapters, I should be convinced of these three ideas if I am an alcoholic, right? If I'm not and I read through these first chapters, that's to show me and help me figure out whether I'm an alcoholic or not, you know? So I really enjoy reading through these, and I wanted to start on more about alcoholism. It's mostly still step one and breaking alcoholism into the different parts that it is, because we know that it's a three-part illness, right? The physical allergy, the mental obsession, and the spiritual malady, right? And more about alcoholism, we start to talk about the obsession more and linking that with the allergy, right? We covered in the other chapters that once I put a drink in me, I can't stop. The power, choice, and control is gone, right? But so far, what hasn't been covered as much is what leads me to that first drink, right? So chapter three, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. Now, when I was like 15 years old, I remember my mom coming up to me and telling me that I had this disease, that I was an addict, that I was an alcoholic at the time. And it didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand it. She talked to me about powerlessness in a very general way. And I remember saying that that doesn't make sense. An addict is somebody who gets sick when they don't put drugs in their body. An alcoholic is someone who gets sick. Then that's all I really saw it as. And I said, well, that's not me. Right, so it can't be me. And as I started to learn what this thing was, as I came to AA more, you know, I started coming around that time and learning a little bit more, I still would look for different ways to kind of differentiate myself, why I didn't need this, why I was different, right? And it's a characteristic of a stubborn alcoholic to want to be different, right? They call it terminal uniqueness, right? Where I'm different from all of you and I need something very drastically different than what you people need, right? Even though you kind of get me, I'm still different, right? And it says that there are, it is characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people, right? The amount of times that I went out there and set out to go have two drinks, three drinks, right? Just to prove to myself that I could do it. I knew that I didn't want to do it, but I wanted to see that I could do it, right? It made sense to me to go out there and to constantly over and over forget everything that happened last time I tried to do it. It'll be different this time. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. And, you know, this is, I like this use of the word obsession right here, because this is the idea behind the mental obsession, right? That somehow, someday, I will drink like a normal person and I will enjoy it. It will be fun for me again. I will feel good doing it, right? Because in the beginning, I did feel good doing it. I would never have kept doing it if it didn't feel good to start off with, right? I liked the way that alcohol made me feel, so I kept doing it. And for me, the delusion kind of looked like me at, you know, my last years of using and drinking and knowing what happened the night before and knowing how I'm going to feel today when I do it, but then thinking back to that time when I was a kid and how much fun it was, right? Or maybe that time a few months ago when I managed to get home unscathed for the most part and everything worked out okay. Forget the other 199 out of 200 times that it didn't work out. That one time is all I can think of. Right, I like to describe the insanity in a couple ways, and something that my sponsor always used to describe it to me as is if somebody is drunk and goes and breaks a bunch of windows and, you know, starts fights and does all these crazy things, that's not insane, right? A 0.25 blood alcohol level will do that to you, right? To any person. You get them drunk enough and they'll do some crazy stuff. That's not the insanity, right? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over expecting different results. And the insanity is knowing that that's what happened last night, I decide to put that much alcohol in my body again, and I believe firmly that something different will come out of it. Right, that it will be different this time. I won't break those windows. I won't punch that guy. I won't do whatever. Right, that's the insanity. Right, and my mind is able to convince me of this over and over and over ad infinitum. Right, my mind can't be trusted. And you know, I really like this one part because it just defines the obsession into one little line right there. Right, I can have the memories of a week, a day, a month, whatever, in my head, and it can all be pushed out for the simple idea that wouldn't it feel good to put one drink in me? And I'll believe that it will be one drink. Right, or I could know that it won't be and still convince myself that it will fix everything. I will feel better. And when it got scary for me, too, was when I knew that it wasn't going to make me feel better, but I was still able to convince myself to do it again and again and again. And towards the end, I wasn't able to convince myself that it was going to work, but I would still find myself doing it. For me, another way that the obsession manifests in my life is what I like to call these out-of-body experiences, right? Where it's like I'm watching a movie through my own eyes, watching myself get in the car, drive down there. I don't want to do it. Every fiber of my being doesn't want to do it. If you hooked me up to a lie detector test that morning when I promised so-and-so that I wasn't going to do it, I would have passed because I meant it. But here I am going down there again, right? I am just as powerless over the obsession as I am over the allergy. Once that one goes in me, it's done. I'm powerless over that. But putting that one in me, I'm also powerless over that, which just creates this big circle, right? Is when I put one in me, I'm going on a bender. And when I wake up in the morning, I will completely delete that bender from existence and start all over again. And it's constant circle, circle, circle. And nothing in my willpower can break that circle. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery, right? The first step is understanding what this is, right? In order to have this first step experience, I must read these beginning chapters all the way up until how it works, because I need to understand what I'm being convinced of, right? To just be told that I am an alcoholic and to use my prior conceptions of what it means to be alcoholic isn't enough, because I don't know what it is that I'm convinced that I am. Right? Even knowing how I act and knowing what I did just from experience, for me, wasn't enough. I was never able to put two and two together and understand that I was truly, really powerless. You know, and for me, I had a couple of those experiences where they say, you know, a belly full of beer and a head full of AA. I've had some time sober in the past on a couple different occasions, right? I've seen some of you many years ago, and I don't have many years sober. But you know, even then, I still didn't fully understand. And when I did, it was even scarier what I was doing and what was going on. And towards the end, when I did understand, it still didn't stop me from drinking. Going back to Bill's story, we didn't read Bill's story here, but when Bill talks about self-knowledge, self-knowledge will keep me sober, right? For me, self-knowledge didn't keep me sober. I had a full experience in this program, and then I stopped doing it, and I started getting drunk and high again. And I remember trying to convince myself that I could apply this program while putting drugs and alcohol in my body, and it would still work, and if I could just be kind to people. And for me, that's not possible. I physically cannot be kind to people with a drink or a drug in me. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. And my question that I ask sponsees is, how is it smashed? Right? And I wrote, it's smashed through experience. Right? I need to experience this. I need to see it for myself in order for the delusion to be smashed. I have to see it with my own two eyes. I have to experience it. And a lot of this can be in hindsight. Most of this stuff I've already experienced, right? A lot of this stuff that I'm learning from is things in my past, right? It's in the past, but as I do this fact-finding and fact-facing mission, I start to be confronted with the actions of my past, with the way that I drink, with the way that I do other things in my life, right? And I'm able to look through that and see where the delusion really lay. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. Yeah, no duh. For me, you know, I I point this out because they say lost the ability to control our drinking, which implies that at some point I did have the ability to control my drinking. And for me, that's true. And that's a big thing that feeds into the obsession, the delusion of my mind. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier, is that when I was younger, I could control my drinking. Right, I could do it normally for the most part. Right, for me, when I first started, I was like, I love this stuff, I want to do it all the time. But it was mostly out of want, not out of necessity. Right, so that power was still there. So it's like I said this last time, you know, once a cucumber turns into a pickle, it can't go back to being a cucumber. Right, it's the same thing for me. But imagine the pickle just obsesses over what it was like to be a cucumber and how I'll do it again tomorrow. Right, that's what I'm doing every single time. I convince myself over and over. We know that no real alcoholic ever regains control. And I underlined ever, and they have it in italics. And italics always means it's important, right? For anybody new, it's a good key to highlight something that's in italics, because it's in italics for a reason. I don't ever regain control. No amount of doing this is going to give me the ability to drink again. Right, that's not what I'm after anymore, because that would imply that I'm cured, and I'm not cured. This offers a program of recovery. I can be recovered. I can no longer suffer from any of these symptoms, but I cannot drink again. And truth be told, I don't want to drink again. Right? I like what this has to offer a lot better. On a little sidetrack, when I was first coming into AA, I remember thinking, getting sober, there's no way that can feel as good as drugs, right? Because drugs and alcohol, they force you to feel good, right? They force me to feel good even when I don't want to. And it makes me physically feel good. How could I ever feel that in sobriety, right? And then somebody pointed out to me that, what am I really looking for when I'm forcing myself to feel good, right? I want to feel happy. I want to feel content. I want to feel at peace. That's all I'm looking for. And that implies that I wasn't already at peace, which was definitely the truth for me, right? That I was suffering. And this offers me peace in my suffering, right? This offers me freedom from the suffering that for me is my default, right? And that was all I ever wanted. And when I finally got to experience that, I realized this is what I was looking for in alcohol the entire time, right? I'm given the solution that alcohol temporarily provided me for, but I can have it permanently if I so choose to do the actions, right? If I let this power greater than myself work in my life. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Now, I am a frequent flyer, or I was, at many rehabs locally and outside of the state. And every time I would go into one of these rehabs, I would come out with a firm desire, sometimes to stay sober, but mostly to moderate. Right? I'm going to moderate, I'm going to control, everything is going to be normal and fine. And temporarily, I would be able to kind of just, you know, ease back into it, dip my toe in, everything was okay. But for me, within a matter of days, sometimes weeks, it would always followed by me getting worse than I was before I went in there. Right? And it was a constant over and over. Every time, I could think of a few times specifically where I would get out and start to manage, and I can never remember the exact day, and that's my sick brain just probably forgetting it on purpose, but I can never remember the exact day, but all of a sudden I was back to where I was again, and it was worse and worse and worse each time. But the delusion hangs on to that little bit where I controlled it, right? Where it wasn't so bad, right? And that's a lot of things that keeps people out there too, or at least people point this out a lot, is that somebody goes out and we're told, you know, to drink is to die, and I truly believe that, and that's a fact in my life. And somebody goes out there and they take one drink and they don't die, right? And then all I can hang on to is that one drink didn't kill me, right? Even though I took 40 more, you know, the next day and then crashed my car and did all this, that one drink didn't kill me. Right? It's all that my mind can hang on to. It can push all other thoughts out of my head. You know, in How It Works, they talk about alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. I disagree. It's my alcoholism that is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It can convince me of absolutely anything. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. And this includes my time sober, right? My time dry. You know, and I don't mean that when I'm doing this, I'm getting worse, but I mean, I pick back up where I left off and then some, right? Every time I've ever had time in AA or just time white knuckling it and trying to do it on my own, when I picked back up, things were even worse. I was even more miserable. Alcohol still did not do for me what I needed it to do towards the end. I had 10 months in sobriety before this. I might have mentioned that last time. And during that time, I had an experience with this program and everything was, you know, all fine and dandy. And when I went back out again, it was significantly worse than I remembered, and I was able to do more damage in a short amount of time, in about a month, than I was ever able to do in my entire career. And I don't know why that was, except that my disease just gets worse and worse and worse. And I really don't like the term, you know, my disease is outside doing push-ups, but it's not the worst way to explain what's going on. You know, it's not going to swing in the window and beat me up if I'm doing this program, but if I let it in, it's like a vampire. If I let it in, it will come in and destroy me, right? And it is getting stronger, right? It is doing work, right? Because when I go back out there, it is like the force of 1,000 drinks. Right, I'm done for. I'm toast. And I know from my experience that for me to do that, I don't know if I'll ever make it back. Right, I don't have the power to just take one. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. And that's a part of the great obsession of every drinker, too, is that I will be like other people. Right? It's so easy to look at the people who are drinking around me, right, and say, why can't I just do that? It seems so simple. It's a simple action. Right? Logic dictates that I should be able to do it, except experience dictates that I can't. Right? But I'm very easily able to forget that. We tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. And I always point that out to my sponsees, too, is that, I mean, this was written in 39. And at the time, this was true, and today it's still true. But science may one day accomplish this. We are not claiming to be the arbiters of all that is alcoholism, right? Which is a big mistake I made last time I was sober, to say that I know exactly what you need to do to get sober. No, I know what I need to do to get sober, and if you think that you have what I have, this might work for you too, right? So Bill and the writers of the book are acknowledging that science might one day figure this out. And truth be told, if they ever do figure out, because they haven't yet, but if they ever do figure out a pill that made my alcoholism go away, I don't think I'd want it, right? Because I don't think there's a pill that can give me a spiritual experience. Maybe one day they'll make one that'll make my obsessive thoughts go away and my allergy go away, but it can't treat my spiritual malady, right? It can't treat my inner suffering that this has so perfectly treated, right? So I don't think personally that I would want it, but I do always try to point that out, that we're not the arbiters of everything alcoholism. I'm not here to say that my way is the only way, because when I did do that, it didn't get me very far, right? It didn't help that many people, and it sure didn't help me. Right? Spiritual arrogance is a poison to me. Despite all we could say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking and can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people, right? I'm not here to convince anybody not to drink, right? If somebody here, or if a sponsee that I'm sitting down with wants to tell me that they think that they can drink like a normal person, well, maybe they can, right? I don't know. I'm here to say that if you know you can't drink, if you know that this doesn't work for you and you're looking for a way out and can't figure it out, then maybe this might work for you. Right, because it worked for me. That was my experience. Right, my experience was, by the end, I didn't want to do it anymore. I knew it wasn't going to work, but I still kept doing it. Right, when the desire is gone, but the action is still going on, is when it really got scary for me. That's what they call that jumping off point. Right, it doesn't work for me anymore. It doesn't give me the ease and comfort anymore. Right, I don't want to do it anymore. The desire is no longer there. And for a long time, when the desire was stopped being there, but I did it anyway, I was able to convince myself that, I guess I wanted to do it. Somewhere in me, I wanted to go drink, right? But at the end, I knew I didn't want to drink anymore, but I was still doing it, right? I was still doing it. That was that jumping off point for me. That was when I knew how totally effed I was. Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list ad infinitum. And I have tried some form of all of these things. You know, and nothing really worked for me. But the thing is, and I talk about this earlier when we said that the delusion, or they talk about this earlier, has to be smashed through experience, right? I had to try all these things, right? In my experience, when I came in here and I still had things that I hadn't tried in order to make this work for me to either moderate or to stop on my own willpower, right? If those were still kind of like my plan B, I can't really come in here with a plan B and do this. It's never worked for me. Right, I'm always going to default to the plan B as soon as things get hard. Right, and you can ask me at the beginning and tell me, you know, oh, are you willing to go to any lengths? Are you willing to do this? Right, and I'll say yes. But once the going gets tough, I'm going to plan B. I'm going to what seems easier. Right, and I need to have that delusion smashed within me that I cannot have a plan B. That I don't have a plan B. That there is no plan B for me. That if this doesn't work, I am going to die. Right. Nothing else has worked for me. I tried going to therapy. I tried doing all those things. I tried seeing addiction specialists. I tried going to rehab. I tried going to rehab over and over and over again, right? I tried moderating and switching brands and doing this, that, and the third. None of it worked for me. None of it worked for me. Nothing could guarantee me more than temporary sobriety that was mostly miserable and filled with fear and depression and pain, right? Until I finally just crawled my way out the door because I couldn't take it anymore, right? And because of that, you know, because of that was my only ever experience with life, I thought that's what sobriety was like. I thought that's what all you guys felt like, and you were either just hiding it really well, or you were liars and you weren't like me, right? I thought every single one of you was miserable because my only experience being sober ever was pain, right? Was suffering, was anxiety, was depression, was fear, was being miserable, right? That was all sobriety was to me. And I figured you guys maybe found a way that you were able to tough it out and pretend you didn't feel that way. That's what I thought this was, right? Until I started to learn that you can get free of that. That was a part of my disease, right? That my disease is not about alcohol, right? Alcohol is but a symptom of my disease. My suffering is the source, comes from my disease, right? We do not like to pronounce any individual as alcoholic, but you can quickly diagnose yourself. Step over to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of the jitters if you get full knowledge of your condition. Right? If not convinced, then go drink. Right? Now, that's a dangerous thing to say nowadays, and I said this last time, too, that, you know, it's kind of a last-ditch effort, right? You know, I don't like to tell people to go drink, but if somebody wants to drink, if somebody thinks that they can drink, right, I'm not telling them to stop. I'm not going to intervene in somebody's life. You know, I heard somebody do this, and I thought it was a great idea. It might have even been somebody speaking here, but they were talking about how they saw some guy outside a liquor store begging for change, and he went inside, and he got him a bottle of vodka or something, I don't know, and he wrote his number on the plastic, on the paper bag, and he said, hey, if you ever want to stop drinking, call me. That's the perfect attitude to have with this program. I am not trying to rip the bottle out of your hand. If you want that bottle, you can have that bottle. I'm here to tell you that if you can't let go of it, if the bottle is glued to your hand, well, then I can help you get it off. Right? And I feel like that's important to push because when I came in here, because of my surroundings, I was under the impression that people were trying to steal drinking from me. They were trying to steal drugs from me, right? And I did not want you to take it from me. I used to be afraid to pray. My sponsor would tell me to pray. Pray that you stay sober today. I used to be afraid to pray for it because I was afraid it might actually work. Right? I didn't want to stay sober that day. And I always try to make it very clear that that's not what I'm trying to do. That if somebody wants to drink, if the desire is there, if they think it might work, who am I to tell them it's not going to work? Right? I've met people who it turned out maybe they can moderate, maybe they can control. You know, that's not my experience, though. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We have heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. A man of 30 was doing a great deal of spree drinking, right? And I really like this story in here before I continue to read the story because it talks about how in the beginning we did have that power, right? That I don't know exactly when I lost my power, but in the beginning it was there. And the man of 30 is a really interesting story because it's about a guy whose disease was doing push-ups outside or whatever you want to call it. I really don't like that saying. But it was, right? The guy goes and gets sober for 25 years, right? He catches it in the beginning. He's like, whoa, this is a bad idea. And then, well, I mean, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't read it, but he doesn't do so well. He dies, right? And that's exactly for me. Yeah, I know. I hope you read it. He was... I know. He was nervous in the morning after these bouts and quieted himself with more liquor. He was ambitious to succeed in business, but saw that he would get nowhere if he drank at all. Once he started, he had no control whatever. He made up his mind that until he had been successful in business and had retired, he would not touch another drop. An exceptional man, he remained bone dry for 25 years and retired at the age of 55. Right now, I highlighted this part because it says he still had power. At this point, he still had power. He said, I want to be successful at business. I'm not going to drink. And he put down the drink. Right, there was still an amount of power in his life to put down that drink. He was able to do that and stay sober for 25 years without fighting the desire. Then he fell victim to a belief, which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers and a bottle. His progression continued while dry. Right, and I wrote dry because he wasn't working a program for these 25 years. He wasn't doing all these things. He simply didn't drink, right? And because he was able to not drink for 25 years, he believed that it was no way that he could be an alcoholic. And I've had so many sponsees who, you know, were weekend drinkers, right? I had one guy in particular who, he drank on the weekends. That was his thing. Every Friday, it was completely impossible for him to not go and start drinking. But he could stay sober during the week. He was miserable. He didn't like it, but he could do it. Right, and he believed because of that that he was not an alcoholic. He couldn't be, right? And we would read the book sometimes, and he would identify with it, and he was like, wow, this is me. I get this. And then we read the part about the hard drinker, the moderate drinker, and whatever, and he calls me up one day, and he's like, Peter, I think I'm the hard drinker. And I was like, oh, really? What makes you think? I was like, well, I can stay sober for 5 days at a time, and it's just, I don't believe that an alcoholic could do this. And I brought up this story, and he was like, yeah, but I'm okay. I can do it, you know? And from this guy's experience personally, over a few months of trying to do that on and off, he'd pop back into the rooms, he'd go back out, whatever. He started to become an everyday drinker, right? That, because I can get sometimes sober in the middle on my own willpower, does not disqualify me from being an alcoholic. And I've seen a lot of people walk out the doors because they see people who drank every day, like me, right? I'm not that. That's not me. I don't drink every day. I can manage my life and be able to stay sober when I need to go to work and whatever, and that disqualifies me, right? And I really think it's important that we bring that up because there are people who walk right out of the rooms because they think, well, I don't drink every day, right? This isn't for me. Out came his carpet slippers. In 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within 4 years. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us believe that if we remain sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. And my first time getting some real time sober, I got 7 months. I'd had like 30 days before that, but I got 7 months where I wanted to be sober. I wasn't, you know, under some legal requirement or whatever. I really wanted to do it. And I got 7 months sober, and I was suffering through most of those 7 months. I did like the half program. I did like the 9 steps my way, you know, which is basically nothing for a guy like me. And at the end of that period, I was just so miserable and suffering so much, but I completely believe that because I was sober for those 7 months, that it qualified me to drink normally, that my tolerance would be lower and I'd be able to drink less and it would make it all work out okay and it would make me feel better, right? And I go, and I might have shared this before, but I go and I said I'll be drinking for 7 days and then I'll come back. Because I had this idea in the back of my head that AA would work for me because I saw it working for you people and I truly believed that it worked. But I needed to go drink right now because I got some stuff going on that you guys couldn't possibly understand and nothing here is going to make that go away, but drinking will help. So I said, I'll be back in a week, right? And that week goes by and another week goes by and another week goes by and people keep bringing up, you know, are you going to come back? You know, my mother asked me, like, are you going to go back? Are you going to go back? And while I try to say yes, I just can't, right? I'm caught in the grips. I had no power once I put it in me, right? And that went on for 2 years before I ever came back to AA. And even that wasn't my last time getting so, or that wasn't my last time using. But here is a man who at 35 years found he was just where he had left off at 30, because there's no reset button, right? There's no button that I can press that can make it start over where I get some time, which is another thing that I believe that because I hadn't picked up a drink or a drug in 7 months, that it would be just like the first time, right? What's the difference? My tolerance is all down, whatever, because all I could think about was the physical attributes. And I didn't really understand this disease was at play, that never in my life are drugs and alcohol going to do what they used to do for me, right? My disease has progressed. It's gotten worse. I like to think my disease has outgrown drugs and alcohol, right? Drugs and alcohol cannot fill the hole in my heart, my spiritual malady, the way they used to, because that hole has gotten bigger. Right? And it won't ever be able to fill it again. So no matter how low my tolerance gets, no matter how the physical attributes change, that will always be the same. And I learned that after I relapsed again after 10 months. When I went and put it in me, and a buddy of mine described this perfectly. He had a similar experience. I got the experience that I was looking for. The drugs and the alcohol did for me what I expected them to do, but they didn't up here. Right? The physical experience was there. Right, but the peace, the ease, the comfort was gone, nowhere to be found. Right, but the reaction that I have to it was still exactly the same. Right, that allergy kicked off, and I just kept going and going. Right, the idea in my head was, well, this is all I got left. Right, and I just kept going and going with it, and I would pick it up the next day and the next day and the next day. But it didn't give me that ease and comfort that it once did in the beginning. And I've come to understand, and this book tells me over and over that it never will. Right, the two things: the power is never coming back, and that ease and comfort that I got from drugs and alcohol, once it's gone, it's gone, right? Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking motion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. And sometimes, I always warn my sponsees of this, but sometimes people kind of get this confused with like me craving and, you know, wanting to go drink and having the obsession with me is the same thing as a reservation. And it's not, because when I came in here, I was terrified that obsession would creep into my head and would go get me drunk again, right? I was absolutely scared out of my mind because I knew it would happen, and all of a sudden it just seems like a good idea, and then I'm out there, I'm gone. And that's not the same thing as me truly believing that it will work. Right? I've had the idea in my head before that it will work, and it's very different from a craving, right? Me wanting to do it, right? Newcomers get cravings, right? They're scared that they're going to act on that craving, right? And that's one of the things this book promises to get me free of, right? The obsession, right? But it's different from a reservation, where I truly believe that if the conditions were different, I could use or drink like a normal person. Sorry, excuse me. That if the conditions were different, I could drink like a normal person. That everything would be okay. If I could have this much money, if this person would leave me alone, if this was legal, then this would work. And that was the delusion for me that had to be smashed, right? I couldn't believe that, because when I did believe that, I would go out of my way to build this life in AA. And as soon as that change happened, I was gone, right? And it wouldn't even really be in my head. But as soon as that change happened, I was gone. When I had 7 months, back when I was younger, I remember in my head, in the beginning, it was if only I could have a steady job, if only I had enough money, if only, you know, everybody would just leave me alone, then I would be okay. And I started to, you know, get a good job, right, while I was in sobriety. You know, sobriety, just being sober, the act of just being sober doesn't heal me spiritually, but things do start to come to you. Right? If you're not showing up to work drunk every day, you might get a raise. Right? You might do a good job. Right? These things do happen. And those just kind of come with time. And even though I wasn't working a program, my time did get me those things, right? And all of a sudden, my mind came back to that reservation that I had in the beginning, that now that I have those things, these qualify me to drink like a normal person. And so I did, right? Those reservations are just waiting to pull me back out there, right? It's the insidious insanity of my disease waiting in the back of my head, right? Those delusions have to be smashed, right? Me just itching and feeling like my only option left is to drink, even though I know it's not going to work, that's not the same thing, right? That's my disease, right? That's the obsession. So I just wanted to describe the difference between that. Young people may be encouraged by this man's experience to think that they can stop, as he did, on their own willpower. We doubt if many of them can do it, because none will really want to stop, and hardly one of them, because of the peculiar mental twist already acquired, will find he can win out. Right? And they point that out about young people being encouraged that they can stop, as he did. During the time that I had the power to put down a drink or a drug, I did have small periods where things were going bad or somebody wanted me to stop or whatever, where I did for like a month, right? The first time I started using, I was maybe, you know, drinking for like a month, maybe 2 months, you know, and my mom caught on to what I was doing and I got in trouble. Like, me and my buddy, you know, did something around the house. And I was scared and I felt really guilty and I was like, okay, I'll stop. And she said, I'm going to drug test you, whatever. And I said, okay, I'll stop. And for like a whole month, I did, right? I did stop. I didn't do anything because I had really just started. And even though I wanted to do it, I had power over it, right? The power of choice was still there, right? But later on, that was not a thing, right? You could frothy emotional appeal seldom. It never sufficed, right? Frothy emotional appeal did absolutely nothing for me, right? It didn't matter how guilty I felt, which I did feel. I felt guilt. I have a heart. I'm a sick person, not a bad person, right? But it just wasn't enough. It just wasn't powerful enough. So when they say this, I always thought that was funny because by the time I came in here, that power of choice was gone. You know, that power of choice was completely gone by the time I would have come to an AA meeting and had that line read to me. Several of our crowd, men of 30 or less, had been drinking only a few years, but they found themselves as helpless as those who had been drinking 20 years. And that's me. That's my experience, right? I was out there for, I don't know, like 6 years, maybe a little longer. And I started drinking and drugging when I was like 14. I'm 22 now, right? And I have 2 years sober. So I was out there for maybe 6 years, and by the end of that, I was so done and so willing to die that I completely relate with the experience of my sponsor who was out there for 15, 20 years, right? I completely relate with the same experience. And just because we all don't move at the same rate, because we don't. Some of us move slower than others. Some of us can enjoy our drinking for longer than others, right? But we're all one and the same. To be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time nor take the quantity some of us have. And that just goes back to what I was saying before, right? It doesn't matter how long I was out there. It doesn't matter what my bottom looks like. I had a buddy call me the other day and he was talking about high bottom and low bottom. And I hate those terms too because high bottom and low bottom makes it look like, dude, I was homeless. I had 50 needles stuck in my arm and I almost got hit by a train. And it's like, I'm low bottom. What's your thing, you know? I don't like that. It's comparing myself out of the room, right? What is a bottom? A bottom is a spiritual bottom inside of me. How broken and dead was I inside when I came into these rooms? What my bottom looks like is good for relating to the newcomer, but otherwise it's almost irrelevant because it's the internal stuff. That's my bottom, right? That's my bottom. How bad did I want to stop and I couldn't? Did the drugs and alcohol still work for me anymore? Did they still do for me what I needed them to do, right? And if they didn't, was I still doing them? Right? That's what my bottom looked like. I was broken. I wanted to die every single day, whether I had a drink in me or if I didn't, I still wanted to die. Right? And I still kept doing it. That was my bottom, that jumping off point where it didn't work for me. Somebody described it really well. I even wrote it down in a meeting where they said when I would wake up, when I was kind of at this jumping off point, when I would wake up in the morning, the first thing I could think of, all I could think of until I did it was, I got to get drunk. I got to get drunk. I got to get drunk. And as soon as I put that drink in me, all I wanted to do was stop, right? I wanted to stop feeling like that. I wanted to be in a meeting. I wanted to be somewhere, right? I dreamed of being right here, right now, right? But as soon as I was sober, it was back to that. I got a drink. I got a drink. I got a drink. That was my jumping off point. That was what that looked like for me. That was that bottom. And it doesn't matter if I was sitting homeless or if I was, you know, in the biggest mansion in the world, right? It makes no difference. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. This was written in 1939. Let's, you know, leave that where it is. We who are familiar with the symptoms see large number of potential alcoholics among young people everywhere, but try and get them to see it. As we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point where we could quit on our willpower. If anyone questions whether he has entered this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for 1 year. If he is a real alcoholic and very far advanced, there is scant a chance of success. And this is kind of like a test that I can use on somebody who's maybe not even in these rooms and just wondering if they're an alcoholic. Right? And I've got buddies of mine who, because they know that I'm in the program and, you know, they like to drink or drug or do whatever their thing is, and they'll ask me, they'll be like, do you think that I have this thing? Do you think, like, I would know because I'm an alcoholic, so I can read your mind and tell? But, you know, I could get an idea, and then they ask me, do you think that I have this thing? And I'll give them this exact test right here. Try leaving it alone for X amount of time, for a year, whatever. See how that works for you, right? Because that's how we figure this kind of thing out. Because if I am a real alcoholic, and if I have gone past that point of no return where I've lost that power, there's no way I can stay sober, right? I can get sober. I cannot stay sober. Right, I cannot keep myself sober, for I have no permanent source of recovery. I only have self-will, and self-will for me doesn't get me very far. In the early days of our drinking, we occasionally remained sober for a year or more, becoming serious drinkers again later. Though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential alcoholic. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay dry anything like a year. Some will be drunk the day after, making their resolutions. Most of them drunk within a few weeks. I'm the day after guy, right? I get drunk the day after. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. I find this important. We assume, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Right? This book and this program is for those of us who desire to stop. They say our only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. Right? I need the desire. If I don't want to stop, I'm not going to. And I've sat in AA meetings as someone who didn't want to stop, but I was in meetings because of other reasons. And I remember identifying and thinking, yeah, that's me, that's me. And then when they talked about how bad they wanted to stop and how they got here and they're so thankful to be here, it made zero sense to me. I did not get it one bit. I was like, if I was in your shoes, I would be out there rolling around in the piles of booze that you had. You know, it didn't make sense to me. I didn't get it. Right, this is for those of us who have the desire. This is not to force anybody. It doesn't work if we try. Many of us felt we had plenty of character. There was a tremendous urge to cease forever, yet we found it impossible. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone no matter how great the necessity or the wish, right? The complete powerlessness over the obsession, over the desire to pick it up, over the desire to start again, right? And for me personally, I have this obsession in other areas of my life too, you know, and the same thing goes with the allergy too. For me today, I have that with sugar, right? I get that with all these different things, right? Because, and all this is the same disease trying to treat my spiritual malady, right? If I'm not treating my spiritual malady today, if I'm not filling that hole in my heart with a power greater than myself, then I'm seeking something, right? And it starts off for me with these small things, right? But it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Right? And then I will push everything else to the side. I will push all logic to the side in order to put that thing in me that I am convinced is going to make me feel better. Because it's in my power and I can do it and I'm taking my will back. Right? It all comes back to self and self-will and me being in charge. I totally lost my place. Oh, there we go. How then shall we help our readers determine to their own satisfaction whether they are one of us? The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers and perhaps to the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental states that precede a relapse into drinking, for obviously this is the crux of the problem. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? And when you tell this story to a normal person, right, they're mystified too. They're like, I don't understand why someone who's about to go through a divorce, who's someone where your, you know, entire life is going to crumble if you take one more drink, you're going to die, whatever the case may be, why you would take another drink. I get it. I get it. I know exactly why you would take another drink, right? Because all that stuff is scary, and you know what's going to make it better? A drink, right? That's what my mind tells me. I totally get it, right? I get why alcoholics drink. You know, I had somebody come up to me in a meeting after I had relapsed and come back, and I put my hand up and I was like, I'm back, I got a day, whatever it was. And this guy who was a friend of mine, I knew him. I mean, we weren't good friends, but he came up to me and he said, why did you drink again? And I was like, I don't know why I drank again. He was like, well, what happened? I told him the story. I'm driving in my car. I can't stop myself. I'm going there. I don't know what to do. Nothing's working, and I just go. You know, I didn't want to, but I just went. He said, well, why didn't you stop the car and call your sponsor? And I was like, huh, why didn't I do that? So I stopped, and I'm scratching my head, and I said, oh, bye, I'll see you later. And I go, and I meet with my sponsor, and I'm like, yo, why didn't I just stop the car and call you? And he was like, because you're an alcoholic, and alcoholics drink. We don't stop the car and call our sponsor. I don't do this. I drink, which is why I need a solution that is going to get me sober. Keep me sober when I'm all on my own, right? When it's no one there but me, right? Because I am the enemy. I used to fear in early sobriety. I like would lock myself in my room. Not lock, but I would close myself in my room, write my four step, and listen to speaker tapes. Because I was so scared that no matter where I put myself, if I knew the way out, then I was going to get drunk. Because the enemy is in my mind and he knows everything that I know. Right? I was scared. I was fighting a battle with somebody in my own head, and it was a real war, because if I lose, I'm going to die. My mind is trying to kill me, right? That's why I drink. That's why I drink. The enemy is up here. So the guy who's telling me to call my sponsor, the other guy's like, shut up, we're going to go drink. And that's how it works for me every single time. So of course I drank. I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know what that guy's deal was or why he didn't understand that, but he didn't understand that, right? And I did. You know, that was actually a guy at a meeting, but whatever. I totally lost my place again. Oh, as we look back, we feel we had gone on drinking many years beyond the point we could quit on our willpower. If anyone questions whether he is entering this dangerous area, let him try leaving liquor alone for a year. Oh, I totally already read that. It's all the way at the bottom. I do this all the time when I'm working with sponsees, too, is when I'll constantly stop and pause for like 5 minutes and look around, and they just stare at me because I always lose my spot. The experiment of quitting for a period of time will be helpful, but we think we can render an even greater service to alcoholic sufferers, perhaps the medical fraternity. So we shall describe some of the mental... I read that too. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal as far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. And I underline that nervous disposition because to me, that is an indicator of my spiritual unrest, right? He's a nervous guy. He's a good guy, right? Maybe I don't know what I look like from the outside, but, you know, I always thought, like, I seemed like a pretty normal, you know, easygoing guy. I was miserable all the time, though, and it kind of would just come off as I'm nervous, right? Because everything made me nervous. I was constantly uncomfortable, right? But overall, you know, I was a nice guy, right? I tried not to, you know, ruffle any feathers or bother anybody, you know, but I definitely caused my fair share of harm. But the way I saw myself was exactly like this. Right? Now, was this reality? I don't know. You'd have to ask the people around me. But I underline that because I think it's important, because it shows that he has that spiritual unrest inside, that nervous disposition. He's uncomfortable. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. We told him what we knew of alcoholism and the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled, and he began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. Right, so he got self-knowledge, right? This is what Bill talked about when he met with Dr. Silkworth, and he explained to him the physical allergy and part of his condition, and he said, okay, I've got this knowledge, right? And now he says his family was reassembled. He began to work as a salesman for the business he used to own, right? Those start to come back with time, right? Trust comes with time. Right? As I get some time together, and I find that most of this program comes with action, right? Or all of this program comes with action, but there are a few things that do take time to come, right? And some of those things are getting the job back, right? Getting some trust back. People, you know, aren't just going to trust you in a day, right? Rome wasn't built in a day. And these are things that even if I'm necessarily not doing this program and not enlarging my spiritual life, they still might start to come back. So life starts to look good around me, right? So I start to think everything's good and maybe I can get a handle on this. And that feeds heavily into my delusion that I've got this, look what I'm building, right? And once I start taking credit for it, I'm going downhill. He failed to enlarge in his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession, because the truth is that I don't drink because my life is bad. My life, personally, is fine, right? My life is great. I love my life today, right? And honestly, my life on the outside isn't much better than it was when I was using, right? The only difference is my attitude. My spiritual life is being enlarged upon today. I can appreciate and be grateful for these things, but at the time, it didn't matter what my life looked like. You could give me $1 million every day, and it wouldn't have satisfied me past maybe a day. The first day, I'd probably be pretty excited, but after that, I move on pretty quickly, because none of these things are enough to treat my alcoholism, but to treat that inner suffering that I have going on, right? None of those things are enough. So if I fail to enlarge upon that, the only thing that's going to pop into my head, because my disease feeds on my pain, right? My suffering and my looking for a way out, right, is that idea that, hey, maybe a drink will make me feel better. Maybe if I was drunk, I would enjoy all of this. On each of these occasions, we worked with him, reviewing carefully what happened. He agreed he was a real alcoholic and in serious condition. He knew he faced another trip to the asylum if he kept on. Moreover, he would lose his family, for whom he had deep affection. So there's some consequences on the line now. The frothy emotional appeals of his family. He loves his family, right? I'm not doubting that this man loves his family, as most, if not all of us do, right? Another trip to the asylum, which he clearly doesn't want to go to, right? These are all things that are on the line. If he takes another drink, he's aware of all of these things. Yet the next line is, yet he got drunk again, right? These things aren't enough to keep me sober. They're what we like to call human powers, right? This book over and over says my ideals must be grounded in a power greater than myself, right? Something that is greater than me. And the way I like to describe that to new guys particularly is that are drugs and alcohol more powerful than me? Any alcoholic who is honest with themselves will say yes, right? Well, are they the most powerful thing in all of the infinite universe? And all that we know is that the most powerful thing in existence, which is typically where they say, no, it can't be, right? So there must be something out there that is greater, right? And even if I don't know what it is, my ideals must be grounded in something out there, right? Something. That's what I'm shooting for. Something that is more powerful than this drink, you know, these drugs, whatever. Something that is more powerful than that, because that is sure as heck more powerful than me. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. I came to work on a Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way there, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at a table, ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still no thought of drinking, right? And I underlined all these things because it's important. He went in there without the desire or thought of drinking. There was no plan. I wasn't thinking it out. I wasn't like, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to drink and it's going to be awesome. No, the thought wasn't there. I know what's going to happen if I drink. He knows. Sanitarium, loss of family. He doesn't want that. He's not planning on going in there for a drink. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind that if I were to put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it couldn't hurt me on a full stomach. I ordered a whiskey and poured it into my milk. I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart, but felt reassured that I was taking the whiskey on a full stomach. That right there in italics is the insanity. That is what the thought looks like. It comes in many different forms, but that is exactly what it looks like. Suddenly. Right? Not creeping in over time. Suddenly. This one thought just finds its way into my head and pushes everything else out. Right? And the idea that I'm full, how could whiskey hurt me? Right? How could it hurt me mixed in milk on a full stomach? Whereas somebody who knows exactly what happens when he puts whiskey in him, all of a sudden, all the rest of it is pushed away for the idea that this will make it different. This will make it different. The experiment went so well that I ordered another whiskey and poured in it to more milk. That didn't seem to bother me, so I tried another. And right there is the allergy, right? The first one didn't bother me, so here goes another and another and another and another. And I wrote vicious cycle under this, because that right there is the circle. And the last thing I'll say before I stop is I find that these first chapters can be rather dark, and they're like that for a reason, right? These first chapters just hammer home how hopeless, how brutal it is to, you know, have the obsession and the allergy, and how I'm powerless, I'm messed up, I'm powerless, I'm done for, there's no shot of me ever overpowering this, and it's like that for a reason, because the first step basically states, you're screwed. Right? Pardon my language. But that's what the first step says. And I need to be convinced and certain of that, right? And if I'm reading this and understanding all of it and realizing this is me, that's the message it's hitting home. And it's so dark because it's darkest before the light, right? And that's when we get into the chapters where it starts to tell us, here's the way out. Here's what we did. Here's how we got free of it. And you can have permanent recovery and permanent freedom from all of, you know, this. Thank you guys for having me, and thank you for letting me share.